Okay, the official beginning. This is February 3rd, Tuesday, 2026. I'm still able to remember what year it is, which does become somewhat odd. You know, when you're born in one century and you live for a few decades in that century, it's a difficult transition into the next century. But here we are. Time is relative. Time is a construct. What else? One of my teachers said, thought creates time. There's a good one to reflect on. So we will begin with about 20 minutes of meditative practice and then proceed from there. So settling into whatever supports your own meditation. And like, I think coming into stillness is as important as any aspect of our posture. Certainly, if you can be upright, that's great. But other postures are fine too. And you can close your eyes or just lower your gaze. So you don't really need to look at the screen for this period of time. Little break for our eyes, for our minds. So beginning by just feeling your body and all the implications of that. What does your body feel like? Just in terms of ordinary sensations and how you're sitting. But then further, the energetic state, when we get excited or anxious or sad or tired or happy, alert. There's all of these different states of physical manifestations that can be subtle or can be quite intense. But just acknowledging where you are on that spectrum of sensations and energies and feeling into that a bit. Not resisting, not grasping, not analyzing or even naming what you're feeling. And here the breath becomes our partner in this process. Just feeling the breath in the body. Can start by just having a sense of the general movement, rising and falling of the chest and belly, the coolness of the inhalation, the warmth of the exhalation. Then we can start to pick out the details of sensation in the breath. If there's enough clarity for that, can you feel the touch of air at the nostrils or the movement of the belly? Staying with the full cycle of breath, a full inhalation, a full exhalation. trying to connect one breath to the next. Maybe some space between breaths. Breath might be longer or shorter, deeper or more shallow. We're just tracking in, out. Our initial effort then is just to calm the body and mind enough to increase our clarity, to be a little bit more aware, feeling the breath, feeling the mood, mind state. At some point, we might be able to make a connection between the breath and the energetic state in the body that we first looked at. The breath can be used as a calming tool, calming method. So we open and release. The body opens with the inhalation and releases with the exhalation. When we intentionally combine awareness of this aspect of the breath with an effort to calm the nervous system. We can start to make this shift. It's not always possible to get to this point of clarity. Sometimes the thoughts are just too steady and too intrusive to really even connect with the subtler feelings. Or we can just observe the thoughts if that's what's predominant. See what's showing up in our mind. What is our mind saying? What are our thoughts saying? Many of our thoughts reflect some bias or some belief about ourselves, about others, about the world, about the future, about the past. And to just see that these are creations of the mind, not necessarily true, not necessarily facts. Just to see them as passing ideas, passing manifestations, a lot of time conditioning or emotional states, various biases. And see if you can let go. Not necessarily believe what's showing up in the mind. Oh, you probably can't hear the bell, so I'm trying to ring it. Had to look and see that nobody had moved, so that was an indication. So yeah, I have to figure out what's wrong with my interface here. I'm not seeing the option to do things with my sound. So anyway, for now, I will just continue and then try to solve that at a later date. So,
Yep, they
welcome.
changed the settings on that. I can chat you how to do
Okay, thanks, Alex. Thank you. Appreciate it. I know that Zoom, beware the upgrade, I always say, you know. Well, first, I don't know if anybody watched Saturday Night Live, but Colin Jost goes, "Well, it's after midnight, so that's the end of dry January." He pulls out a drink, starts drinking. I was like, "Yeah, dry January. Let's try dry every day." Anyway, welcome everybody. Nice to see people. Nice to be back. As did I mention I got a cold in New York? Shocker. And anybody who's followed me for the last 5 years or longer knows that when I get a cold, it's gonna stay with me. I'm only 2 weeks into it. I mean, I'm sure I have at least another 2 or 2 to 4 weeks left. Anyway, I'm fine. And very mild. Geez, a few things on my mind. I mean, obviously, like, 2 weeks, it's like a lot happens in 2 weeks. And I'm just thinking about, like, why are we here? Well, presumably, Dharma, recovery, people are trying to support their recovery and cultivate their meditation practice and maybe get some Buddhist teachings to sort of support that. And also maybe just to, like, have a, connection and a break and all of that. And I think that's right, why we're here. And you guys also know that I don't like to just pretend that there isn't some, crazy world out there, and how to manage that, how to, practice a spiritual path and be engaged in the world. And it's one of the great challenges, and certainly just being able to manage that emotionally. It takes strong intention or real clarity, and, like, obviously partly limiting how much you take in because of media. But then, we all have to make the choices in terms of how engaged we're going to be, and this group is largely, white and skews older, and so we have very different lives from, we had my daughter and her boyfriend over on di for dinner with his parents on Sunday night, and the younger people were talking in incredibly bleak terms about the world and about the future, particularly. That's heartbreaking. And that's partly their personalities, and but when I hear that, I think if that were my mind state, I'd just still be drinking and I would just be miserable. And both of them are actually very mature in their lifestyle, healthy lifestyles, and engaged, and so anyway, I just say all that because I also think about my own place and what am I doing, and how can I be of service. And obviously, I've found something that I do to try to help people, and sometimes it doesn't seem like enough. But in the last, like, 3 days, I've encountered two people who were, like, had relatives who were a active addicts, and just really remembering that whatever's going on culturally and politically addiction is a through line to every moment in history, you know, and to certainly to our current world and our country. So addressing it is probably, since it's pretty much the only thing I know how to do in a useful way, nobody wants to, you know, hire me to play for their bar mitzvah, so I'm not going to be a musician anymore. Anyway, I'm sorry if that's too lengthy prelude to whatever comes next. So yeah, I mean, it's sort of I can't sort of get off this idea because, you know, I'll go to this idea of taking refuge, and which is often and has been kind of used as a framework for Buddhist recovery. You know, refuge recovery was the first program built on Buddhist principles. It came several years after I began to do this work, but I didn't try to, and I still don't continue, try to create a program. But the idea really was to replace the God of the 12 steps with taking refuge, turning your will and your life over, if you will, to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. And you know, I think that's a wise way to sort of offer these teachings to people who are seeking recovery. It gives a framework that I think is very workable. You know, taking refuge in the Buddha. You can talk about it in many different ways, but the kind of key way to me is, you know, committing yourself to be awake and aware. So committing to being mindful and to engaging the world with clarity, which obviously then implies not being intoxicated. So that's, you know, that's the internal in way of being in the world. And then taking refuge in the Dharma is, again, different ways to talk about this, but the way I like to think of it is that my mind has a certain way of interpreting and engaging with everything that it experiences, everything that I experience. The Dharma gives me, and that's very conditioned and tends to be biased and, you know, contains delusion and craving and addiction and all those habit patterns that are me, right? And that when I take refuge in the Dharma, I try to step out of that orientation and try to look at externally and internally, look at the world and look at my own mind through this lens of the Dharma, which means then I have to study the Dharma to some extent. I need to understand, oh, everything is impermanent and craving causes suffering, and I need to practice, you know, morality, and I need to practice compassion. And I, you know, how can I view this situation through the lens of compassion rather than through the lens of self? How can I act with right intention? What's a skillful intention to have that's not based on my own greed, hatred, and delusion? So that's the study part, which is not, you know, some huge amount to study. I mean, it's the Eightfold Path and the three characteristics are key. And then so there's the I'm going to try to be aware and awake and clear-minded. The refuge in Buddha. I'm going to try to see things through a real lens outside my own deluded interpretation of the world. I'm going to try to, see that and act in accordance with that, with what I see. And then taking refuge in the Sangha is most explicitly just having a community, building, being part of a community, being engaged in a community, because none of this really works alone. That's a very sort of American idea, this sort of heroic image of like, I'm going to do it myself. And it doesn't work very well. And it's interesting, even that, when you think about people who resist or don't, have trouble getting and stabilizing themselves in recovery, a lot of times it's because they don't want to be part of that certain community. Oh, I don't want to go to those meetings, or I don't want to, I don't like those people, or whatever their story is. So this idea of refuge, the bigger picture of it to me, the overarching idea is that there's a questioning of how I am engaging, how I am just behaving. What am I doing in my life right now? Is what I'm doing just to make myself feel better right now? Or is it engaging in a ongoing process of transformation, I guess we would say in grandiose Buddhist terms, but we could just say trying to continue to grow, and that's that idea is why we don't just go to rehab and then we're done. I'm 40 years sober, and this work continues. And it's not that I'm not particularly focused on not drinking. I know there's a lot of you here who are not particularly focused on not drinking, but you are focused on taking care of yourself and dealing with life on life's terms, as we say. Just, it doesn't, it's one of those questions like, oh, is everything that shows up emotionally for me a result of the fact that I'm an addict? And it's like, I don't know if I buy that. I don't really care. The fact is that life continues to be challenging, not just externally, but internally. Emotions keep showing up, and aging happens, and the how you deal with the losses, the physical and mental losses of it. Aging, the changing world, how you deal with that emotionally, and I need a structure for that, and that's what the Buddha Dharma Sangha provides, is a structure for how to continue to engage in life. And we frame it in this idea of recovery, and that's a useful frame. I'm not sure that it's exactly what's happening. I'm not sure that what I deal with on a daily basis that I find challenging is me trying to recover from being a drug addict and alcoholic. That's not quite it, but as I say, it's provided this framework to for living, and we realize, I mean, sangha, fellowship, community, we realize like that's got to be there. And it, when you lose that, you can really become untethered. And people keep going to AA meetings, and people keep going to Buddhist groups or whatever they do, not necessarily to stop drinking or to maintain their sobriety. But, to me, when I first came to, when I first showed up at AA and started to listen, what was impactful for me was that I was hearing my own pain spoken aloud, and I had never heard that. I had heard it when I said it to a therapist, but that didn't make me feel less alone. Made me feel probably more alone because I was talking to a therapist, which meant there was something wrong with me, and I was uniquely there was unique. He or she was there to like fix me because there was something wrong with me. They were fine, and probably everybody else is fine, but and that obviously that's just a mental distortion, but that's how it feels. And so showing up at a meeting where a whole bunch of people are like, "Yeah, I'm fucked up. Oh, I'm fucked up. Oh, yeah, this is really hard. Oh, this is," I was like, "Oh, great. Like, me too. And I'm not alone." And isolation and being alone with pain is just so, it's so much worse than having community. It's so interesting, right? How, whatever, human beings are these social animals and all this sort of talk. We are, it just makes all the difference in the world. And I've always taken that framework into this thing that supposedly, am I teaching something right now? I don't think so. I'm just speaking, which I hope I'm speaking for and with the community, not telling you something you don't know. Just what we get together to remind ourselves what we already know, right? It's not, oh, wow, everything is impermanent. I didn't know that. Oh my God. No, it's just it's being together. I mean, it's so interesting what I know some of you are probably, watch Rachel Maddow. My daughter, of course, refused like that to her, blah, blah. Anyway, let's put my daughter aside. Love you, dear. I know. She's not here, but, in my mind, she's here. But you can see if you're watching her in these last months, is that what she's trying to do is remind us that we're not alone. It just every one of her shows starts with her showing all these different protests and all these different things that are being done because there's this feeling that, we're alone. I mean, I guess, I certainly feel that at times. Oh, the world is slipping away. The world's being destroyed and I can't do anything about it. It's like, oh no, there's actually like a lot of people. So sobriety, the same thing. We're not alone in sobriety and knowing that and having a community that cares about us and that shares with us our struggle is a world of difference. And it's interesting, isn't it, how people resist being part of that? Many of you have heard me, tell the story of someone from my old like home group in Venice Beach. This woman would tell the story of how, like, oh, this young woman came in and she said, "I don't know if I'm really an alcoholic." And my friend said to her, "Oh, be one. It's fun, you know." And that epitomizes what this is like, that line between, oh God, like, what did each of us think it meant to like go to, if you, I don't know how many of you went to AA or NA something, A, or some other program or rehab. What did we think that meant? We thought it meant failure. We thought it meant a miserable, boring, I mean, I thought it was a miserable, boring life, without drinking and using. And this sort of view of, the people in the church basement with, watered down coffee and stale cookies, and old men in trench coats or something, And then you discover, oh, it's this vibrant, engaged, loving community that's fun, that's fucking fun, So thank you for being here. Thank you for being on this path. It would not be fun alone. When I was first starting to teach, and I was always kind of whatever opportunity I would get to teach, and there was a little group over in Marin. I don't remember what town, but somewhere in Marin County, and was quite small. And one time I showed up, and there was one person there. We just sat there and we meditated and then we talked and we had a great time. And I was like, yeah, because I tell this story too, that years ago I was in a band in Vermont, and one night the drummer and I went to this open mic, like a Monday night, in this bar in Burlington, to just do some of our songs and jam a little bit, play acoustic guitars. And I get up there and I go, well, since there's nobody here, we'll play this. And somebody in the back room yells out, we're here. And that embedded in my mind that whether I'm teaching, I'm performing, whatever, if I'm just in an AA meeting and there's one other person, then there's a community. It's not about the number. Although I do always check how many people are here on Zoom, because it's my self-esteem is based on the right number of people coming. No, but it's quite amazing, isn't it? That one person. Oh yeah, we had a great time, right? Like, rather than, oh shit, man, I didn't get much Donna, and I really. The way we measure things. So, in any case, I think I've talked enough to get a conversation going. And excuse me. Oh, hopefully Zoom is suppressing my cough from the microphone. I will. My talks are going to be better starting next week. I did have a few, I just, didn't get organized. So I apologize if this was even more rambling than usual. But thank you again for being here, and see a couple of virtual hands up that I will, invite you to speak, Steve.
Well, first of all, the work that you're doing is incredibly important and it's extremely valuable. And it's very easy to feel completely hopeless in these times. There's no doubt about it. The most pervasive addiction going on in this world today is greed and this striving for to be rich and wealthy. And that the super wealthy are destroying every fabric of life on Earth. And they've done a damn good job of it. And so, we have to stay together because I'm not going to give up and I'm not going to feel hopeless. And that's why I come here to be with the community because I have to be part of the community. My only salvation is being in the Sangha and doing my meditation and staying positive and doing what I can because it's virtually impossible for young people today to think about even who wants to be really rich anyway. I don't want to be really rich. I feel I'm rich in heart and soul and spirit, but they're taking over everything. And I started listening to a lot of old Ram Dass lectures. And back in the 70s and 80s, he's talking about this stuff back then, and it's all happening.
Yeah, indeed.
We're consuming the earth 7 times faster than what they predicted 40 years ago. So what you do is
Thanks for that statistic.
well, I can give you a lot of statistics, but the
Okay,
bottom line
Steve.
is what you do is extremely important and is very valuable, and you do need to get healthy because 3 weeks from today we'll be in retreat, and I'm going to be listening to your teaching.
Yeah,
So
that's right. I've got a lot of work to
thank
do.
you. Thank you for
Thanks,
what you
Steve.
do. You're loved very much so.
Well, two songs came up. We got Rihanna, We Found Love in a Hopeless Place. So there's that. And then there's a song from the film High Society, which was based on the Philadelphia story. Who wants to be a millionaire? I don't. Sorry. Anyway, this is what happens when you get old. A lot of songs, just that's all. Eventually, with people with Alzheimer's, it's like all the only thing they remember, right, is old music. So I'm pretty much, I think that's seeing my future there. John, hello. How are you?
Hey Kevin, I'm good, thank you. Hey, so you mentioned, taking re and you've talked about this before, and I understand. So taking refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha,
Right.
and I get Dharma and Sangha, but if you could just talk a little bit more about taking refuge in the Buddha, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is something I encourage people to look at and listen to different teachers talk about this because it's, there is a, largely this is metaphorical in a sense, particularly taking refuge in Buddha, because in a traditional sense, taking refuge in Buddha, it can be seen as a kind of religious thing that's taking this dead teacher as your teacher or your guide. And so that would be kind of the most basic traditional way of viewing taking refuge. I bow down to the Buddha kind of thing. Which isn't really the way Westerners, at least, talk about it. Ajahn Chah would say, let's see, Buddha is the one who knows. So taking refuge in the one who knows. It's that the way people talk about it, like your Buddha nature, which I find that a problematic term, but the idea being, there's an aspect of me, there's a quality I have of inherent wisdom and clarity that, we can just call it mindfulness if you want. But that's kind of, that isn't deluded. It's a capacity to be awake. It's the capacity. So the word Buddha means awake in Pali, or so it's taking refuge in being awake. So it's, I think, helpful to just look at it. What's the negative of that? What's being asleep? Well, most everything we do is being asleep, right? When we're not being mindful, which is like 99.999% of the time in our ordinary lives. And if you're in retreat, maybe it's only 99% of the time. But it's when are you asleep? When you're looking at a screen, you're asleep. When you're caught up in craving, you're asleep. When you're angry and aversive, you're asleep. All these ordinary, when you're thinking about stuff that's not happening right now, which is like most of the time, right? When you're walking down the street and you're thinking about everything but what's on the sidewalk in front of you, that's being not being in refuge. So it's to keep trying to snap yourself out of that, like, oh, what's happening right now? Oh, breathe, look, see, engage, be with. What am I feeling? What's in my mind? Being present. So being present is another way of, taking refuge in the Buddha. So it's really, excuse me, it's really like the starting point of this whole thing, like trying to be mindful, trying to be awake. And then everything else comes out of that. Okay.
Helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Deborah.
Your shares today reminded me that in any kind of a meeting or in a recovery sangha, which I would think of this, or a Buddhist sangha in a share, like we have a share after a Dharma talk, those shares are all the same if they're talking about everyday problems. They're all regarding how we cope with whatever tools we have. And it basically goes to the Eightfold Path or the 12 Commandments or whatever tools we have. That's the way I look at it. It's like whatever works for you. And what the Buddha has said, and I'm going to paraphrase, if this works for me, you try it. That's a lot more gentle than any of the other religions of the world. At least that's what I think.
Thank you. Well, one characterization that I love of the distinction between Buddhism and other religions, I heard from the Reverend Hung Shur, who's the director abbot of the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery. He said most religions are founded on an orthodoxy, that is, a set of beliefs. Buddhism is an orthopraxy, a set of practices. And we aren't, there's no demand to take on a set of beliefs, but rather to practice in a way that will reveal what is true. Rather than having the truth be handed down to us, it is, we're encouraged to look into it and discover it for ourselves. So that's certainly what I think draws many of us to the Dharma, is that it's a orthopraxy. Yes, Tanya, hi. How are
Hi.
things in Decatur?
Finally warming up a little bit
Oh,
today.
yeah, good.
Cold, cold, cold. But yeah, thank you so much for your talk and all the shares. Very, very helpful today. I've been noticing, kind of coming back to the bleakness around everything. I am involved in recovery Dharma meetings. And I think what I'm seeing is this sort of spiritual survivor's guilt that people feel like it's not okay for them to be happy right now. And so, can, like, is it okay for me to have some happiness and joy while all this chaos is going on? And for me, I think, well, yes, that's kind of the whole point, is to be able to foster that and carry that as sort of a light, within us that, can be a helpful thing in the world. But I have moments of struggling with that too, thinking, well, is it really okay? I'm reading Recovering Joy with a friend right now. And it is okay for us to be happy. It's okay for us to be healthy, content, at peace, all the things we say metta for others, and for ourselves. And I think it's been a little harder to hang on to that, to remind myself of that. And I like John's question about refuge in the Buddha. For me, it's refuge in the wisdom of the Buddha, and not any one deity. And it's also not just the Buddha. There have been many Buddhas.
Well, there's that.
And so it's also a sort of a faith thing for me, that I'm saying that I have faith that beings have been enlightened, and they have discovered this wisdom, and I'm going to have faith that I can, believe in that and work towards that as well. So that's my take on that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Tanya. I just want to acknowledge that it is 11, so I know some people will start to fall away due to responsibilities or boredom or whatever things they would rather do. But I will continue as usual, and particularly since I wasn't here last week, I owe you. No, I'm happy to hang out and talk some more. And I wanted to say something about what Tanya was saying. And I guess I just wanted to say the weather in California is just fantastic. So I don't know why people live other places, but that's their choice. I can't hold that against them. Alex, go ahead. And thank you for your suggestions about the Zoom interface. I actually just discovered that I needed to go to like full screen And then it brought, because I didn't have that, the icons at the bottom. I didn't have the audio icon at all. That was what was really confusing. Anyway, thank you for encouraging me.
Yeah, and stoked to hear your home group was in Venice. That's
Beyond Baroque. Do you know the,
no, but I'll check them out.
it's Beyond Baroque is on Venice Boulevard. It's an art center, at least it was. It was the former city hall of Venice. And
Excellent.
it was turned into an art center some probably 40 years ago, 50 years ago, since I started there 40 years ago. And they had a Sunday morning meeting at 10:20. The meeting started at 10:20 because it was started by some jazz musicians who would show up at 10 and jam for 20 minutes.
Oh, that's so great.
And then they would start the meeting. And the room was painted all black.
Fun.
It's where I met David Bowie. So there you go.
Amazing.
On his first day of sobriety. So I'm
Cool.
breaking his anonymity, but he's dead, so I'm not sure what the rule is around that, but God bless.
It's all good.
So is there something, I'm sorry, I didn't
Yeah,
mean
for
to
sure.
speak.
No, I just came off of a 10-day Vipassana sit, and
In the Goenka form or yeah, okay.
he's a bit of a gangster to me. I actually called him Goangsta when I was on.
Oh, that's
I don't
funny.
know that he's fully
Okay.
my teacher, but I appreciated deepening in my sitting practice. And actually,
Yeah.
when I got off of the retreat, I found myself picking back up a Burning Desire, and it had a lot of new depth because I'd really sat deeply with my discomfort. I would say the unexpected thing was that for me, body pain got worse and worse and worse.
Oh yeah.
And I kept expecting to transcend it. And there was no such thing. It just, I really had to learn not only how to sit with it, but also how to care for myself in a very narrow structure of what I was allowed to do on
Yeah.
the retreat to care for my body. And so I mindfully broke some rules to do some yin yoga and
Good.
get some postures to help
Yeah.
myself. But it was so apparent coming back out that everything I sat with is out in the world. It was just so clear. And I was grateful for, and I'm speaking this to kind of remind myself, a more subtle awareness of not just my aversion to pain, what I do when I'm uncomfortable, but how much I crave comfort. And I think to me, the biggest recognition after lots of years of sobriety from substance abuse is how pervasive technology is in my life and how good it is at demanding my attention and how that changes how I feel in my body as a result. And, I think recognizing the way in which it habituates me and learns my habits and studies them intensely and improves on its ability to demand my attention is, for me, was quite an overwhelming part of Vipassana, because I had my phone taken away and I was so grateful. When I was younger, I took 8 years off of screens because I realized what they were doing to me. And again, I was struck with how beautiful it was to be without technology. And I run a tech company. I'm a digital music production person, and I run an AI mental health company. So I'm in the fucking machine.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing, even 2 weeks out of sit, how much it's already got my attention again. And what that feels like in my mindfulness practice when I go to sit, how long it takes my brain to come back to that level of concentrated focus that I had sitting. So I'm just committed. I'm committed. I'm so deeply committed to my practice right now, and committed to taking more and more retreats when I can, because that's really the golden time to me of having a break from the world that we've created together. So grateful to be back in this room. It's been a minute, and nice to feel the Sangha. And maybe I'll just comment and say, I took refuge in the Buddha on the retreat, and it really helped me to feel that potential of awakening inside of me and to commune with that deeply and to really see viscerally, to feel that sensation of awakening as a something to contemplate. It was quite beautiful. So yeah. Thanks,
That's
man. Appreciate it.
great. That's really like a really good another element of that is to and maybe the key element of taking refuge in the Buddha is taking refuge in that potential for awakening, of true awakening, not just being mindful in a moment. And I really appreciate your reflections on attention and the attention economy and the screens and someone like you really has a has something to offer the community around that however that manifests, but because you know both sides deeply, and so I appreciate you sharing about it and encourage you to keep talking about it, keep thinking about it, because it is it's so interesting, isn't it? Because I mean these tools are so precious. You and I are talking to each other and seeing each other. Like, we couldn't do that just a few years ago, and that's a huge gift. And we know, like, what people thought the internet was going to be. Stuart Brand and people, the original, the well, and all, the beginnings, this idea of this great gift to humanity. And as was mentioned, sort of greed, hatred, and delusion tend to permeate and get and grab hold of everything. And but it's still there, right? And you're still working in it, and obviously you see that positive potential and are working to cultivate that side of it. So it's like everything else, it ain't simple, and it's not, and we're seeking a middle way with it. Is not to abandon it, not to become Luddites, but not to let it control us, which of course is really the existential question about AI, right? That people really have that concern. That, I mean, you're talking about it control, having a sense of it, its control over you, and technology just having a control over you. But now we're actually talking about that as more than just a choice, that like being addicted, but rather actually being, subjected, subservient to some technology that actually takes over our world. Like, fortunately, I'll be dead. So it's the one good thing about being old. That's why it's hard to be young right now. Really, really hard to be young. So yeah, I hope you find Beyond Baroque. I think it's still there. There's actually a like a Facebook group of people who used to go to Beyond Baroque 40 years ago, all the old people, and it's like, oh, so and so died last week. I'm like, great, thanks. I'm glad I'm part of this group. Yeah. All right. That
Excellent.
seems like a good spot to end on. I don't see any more hands, and I got plenty. It kind of takes me about 2 months to do my taxes, so I'm a couple of weeks into that right now. I get like 30 10 1099s, so we're recording this. And by the way, I pay everything, I report everything, so I just want the internet to know that,
Welcome back. So happy you're here.
Thanks, Steve. And for those in Berkeley, I'll be next Tuesday night. I will be at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery. So anybody who wants to join in person. Otherwise, I will see you next Tuesday.
Take care of yourself.
All right, you guys too.
Feel
Bye.
better.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.